Welcome back to today's episode, the podcast where we delve into the latest installments of a different series every show. Today, we're discussing We Were the Lucky Ones, a new World War II drama based on Georgia Hunter's 2017 New York Times bestselling novel. This TV series brings to life the harrowing saga of the Kurtz, a Jewish family in Poland whose lives were irrevocably changed following Germany's invasion. Spanning 9 years and 4 continents, the show strives to adapt the 400-page novel into 8 episodes, the first 3 of which are out now, Radom, Lvov, and Siberia. They're on Hulu. Each is an hour long. Without further ado, I have a game for us to kick this off. Okay. It's a cast game. My first question is true or false. Joey King and Logan Lerman, the two biggest names in the series, who play siblings Addie and Helena, previously worked together.
True.
In what?
Hunters?
Bullet Train.
Bullet Train? Oh, yeah, that's right. No, I did see that Logan Lerman. I don't think he gets any screen time.
Oh, he does. Because like, she said in one of the interviews, the only scene is her spitting in his dead body's face.
I didn't even remember. Yeah.
Because she plays sort of the evil villain.
She's one of the main characters, but he's in it for like, what, maybe 2 minutes at most?
How would you like to get spit on by your castmate and never have an actual talking scene with them? That's strange. The second question I have for you is the woman who plays their mother.
Yeah.
Did you recognize her?
Yeah, she's Robin, right, I think?
Or Robin Weigert.
Yeah, Weigert. She's from Sons of Anarchy, Miss Marvel.
What have we seen her in last?
Oh, wow. I think it was a show for the podcast. But
very recent.
I don't remember which one it was.
It was Trackers. She also played Trackers. She played the mom type character, though, but she was a lesbian. In this, she is just the regular mom.
Right. She was helping Justin Hartley, if I remember correctly.
How would you describe her character in this show?
Well, she's kind of the glue that holds everyone together. Like Logan Lerman in the first 2 episodes, he's just writing to her because he's trying to get to her and get to the whole family as well. She also owns the garment shop that gets shut down in the first
episode. I think saying that she's the glue really fits because like this is a very family-based show and we're following all these characters as they're separated and torn apart to all these different places. And she's really the one that, at least with Addie, he's trying to connect with this whole entire.
It reminded me a little bit of how you thought about Dear Edward the first episode, because the first 15 minutes is the family all being together, and it's supposed to be kind of happy. They're celebrating Passover with one another, but then you already know that there's this like longing sense of dread that's about to come because it's 1938. Right,
yeah, that's 1938, and the book starts in 1939. They added that scene so that they could introduce all the characters together in what could normally feel like an inconsequential family gathering. You know, it is Passover, it's a special holiday, but the conversations aren't like super important.
I think my favorite part of the 15 minutes was when you saw the siblings all talking in that one room together.
Yeah.
It felt very realistic.
Got a chance to see their personalities play out, but you also, understood that Germany was going through what it was. Europe was not completely blind to it. However, they still believed that in the next year they would be able to have another version of Passover. But by then, Germany hadn't invaded Poland yet, but they were about.
Well, Addie is not even able to get there.
Yes, we will get there in a second, but I do want to finish this game off. There's 2 more questions. Henry Lloyd Hughes Kurtz has been a detective in 2 of the series that we've done for this podcast. Can you name them?
I didn't recognize him when I was watching him.
Yeah.
But I'll just say true since you said it was going to be
harder. No. This isn't a true or false. It's naming those two.
Oh, naming the two things?
Yes.
Oh, I don't even. Monster Spain, possibly.
Ragdoll in The Irregulars. He played Sherlock Holmes in The Irregulars, and he was one of the main characters in Ragdoll.
I never would have guessed.
I didn't even remember that we had
Ragdoll.
Yes.
Wow. So he's one of the main characters. Yeah. No,
him and Lucy Hale.
It just clicks who he was. He looks a lot different in this series than he does in Ragdoll.
Does he?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's been a couple years. He looks way older here. Yeah.
Does he? Okay, because in the last episode, I think we get the most of him in episode 3.
Episode 3.
All right, last question is Amit Rahav, who plays Jakob Kurtz and is known from the series Unorthodox. What year was Unorthodox released?
Was it 2020?
Perfect. Yes, you got that one. All right.
I never saw it, but I heard a lot of people talk about it.
So it seems like you've got 3 out of those 4 correct. Congratulations. Now we can move on to the actual show. The opening of the series, we just went over it a little bit, Passover, April 15th for everybody.
Well, the very first scene I found interesting because
you're talking about the...
Yes, the very, very first thing. We see Helena, it's 1945, I believe. She gets a letter, she opens it, and it plays almost like a teaser for the series.
Yes.
Because we get a lot of shots of scenes that I've... assume are going to be in the next couple episodes.
We get her headspace and her mindscape showing us all these flashes of exactly what you are later on going to see. And I, for sure, we haven't seen all those play out.
Yeah, not yet.
But then we get transported back to 1938. The family's having this Passover dinner together. We should go through the character.
Yes.
There's Addy, who is the famous musician.
He plays the piano. I was wondering if Logan Lerman actually plays the piano because he does it so much in this series, but we never actually see him play it.
One of my main ticks, and we'll get to that, I promise you, because I do have a little bit of a issue with it. However, there's just so much music that you're saying that he's playing. It would have been kind of hard for him to learn it. Suffice to say, he does not play the piano.
He also has an engineering degree, as we learn when he's speaking to his mom.
Yes. Well, actually, his mom is the one who pushed for it. I only listened to the first 10 minutes of the book, because this came up so quickly and I didn't have a chance to listen to the full thing. But in that first 10 minutes, it's his experiences. He's writing to his mother, and he's saying how he knows that even though he did become pretty big in the music field, like his song is being played on the radio, he does compose music. Later on, we see him entertaining guests on a boat for a while, but that she forced him, kind of like with baseball players or any sort of sports players where their parents are saying, you still need to get your education.
Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Yes. And so he also becomes a pretty good engineer. He's known how to fix a radio since he was like 5 or 7 years old, how to take one apart and put it back together.
It reminded me of All the Light We Cannot See, because I don't remember what the guy's name from Dark was. He ends up doing the same thing. The actor, I remember, learned how to do that, and they put that
That's
in
true.
All the Light We Cannot See.
A lot of comparisons. We've done a lot of World War II shows recently. Transatlantic was a year ago, or maybe 2 years ago.
Most recently, it's been like Masters of Air.
Masters of the Air, absolutely. Helena plays Addie's sister. They have this close relationship as far as like kind of twin souls, and she's dating this guy named Adam. Their other sibling is Yannick, right?
Yep.
And he's dating Ertha. Jakob is the other sibling.
He is a lawyer. He is dating Bella, and even some of the siblings are teasing him, saying that they should just get married already because it's been so long.
And then you have the oldest sister, that's Mila, right? Mm-hmm. And she's dating Salim. And then, of course, the parents. And eventually, Mila has a baby who she names Felicia, right? So a ton of people, lots of people to keep track of. And do you think that that takes away from the show?
I do, because I think that the show had a hard time trying to allocate how much time to give each character.
Honestly, I got Yannick and Jakob confused several times. Like I had on rewatch in the third episode, it took me until I realized who was who and who was being taken and stuff.
But didn't you get that? Like it seemed like characters were given a lot of time in separate episodes. Like Helena for the first two episodes, it seems like she's going to be the main character. Then she shows up for like two scenes in the third episode. Addy, his one storyline for the first two episodes is him trying to get home. And then we're given a ton of time with him. Yes, from France. And then we're given a ton of time with him in the third episode. He almost seems like the main character.
He's trapped on that boat. Yeah. He's like on a Titanic.
Same thing with Yannick. We do get a little bit of him in the first episode, but the third episode is really his time to shine. But it just felt like it was really choppy storytelling. Mm-hmm. That's how I felt about it.
So are those your cons then?
That was my biggest con.
I will go into my pros. My first pro is that this has the author's involvement in it. Again, the book only came out in 2017. Georgia Hunter, this is what her quote was from the pitch on the writer's room. I got to be in the room for 5 months, 5 hours a day, getting to know the writers. I did not write a script. I was more like a consultant and a sounding board and to provide source material and answer questions. So that I think is great.
Yeah,
whenever you can get the author's involvement, especially in something like this, where it doesn't feel crafted like Transatlantic or Hunters, where they make up things about history.
Right.
She did her due diligence on it. There are also no good Nazis showing up.
Thank God.
So far. We made the big deal about that. And what was the one that you just brought up?
Masters of the
Air. No, the other one. There are no good
all
Nazis.
All Lights We Cannot
Yes,
see.
Of course. There's a good Nazi in that. No hybridized, brighter, modern take like we get in Transatlantic.
Also, Joey King, I thought this was the best that I've ever seen her. And I've only ever skipped through The Kissing Booth and seen her in Bullet Train. But I thought here she did her best acting.
I mean, she's been in The Conjuring. I think she's married right now, but I don't think that factors into anything. I also like that we were learning while watching the show, because while Hunter's book is fictional, the Kurtz family is based on her own family that she did a lot of research
on. You mean
on.
While We Were the Lucky Ones is fictional? You said the Hunter's book is fictional.
Hunter is her last name.
Oh,
Georgia
okay.
Hunter. Okay. And then also we learned about the Soviets a little bit more than we normally do when we see these World War II stuff. Like they had the most fatalities of any nation in the war, and they were critical to the Allied success. And in the episode, the second episode, they save Helena and Bella, who are trying to make their way from Nazi-occupied Poland into part of Poland that is controlled by the Soviets. Right. But that doesn't take away from the atrocities that they did commit, especially the NKVD, which was kind of like the SS, the underground police for them. They would execute citizens. They got these forced labor camps that we see with Yannick being stuck in there.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that even though they do have that scene in episode two, they aren't portrayed in a great light. Yannick is arrested because he didn't say that he was Polish. And then it ends up being that Helena, by the end of the third episode, ends up getting what I assume is either arrested or going to be put in a concentration camp as well because of what she was doing in the lab.
Camp because again this is the Soviets, but it was that gulag system, and I think it's just important to realize that the title of the series is really, really important. It's We Were the Lucky Ones. Right. So my biggest complaint while watching the whole thing was like, it feels like a lot of the things they're getting away with, so many people did not. But they start off the series by saying 90% of the Jewish families in Poland did not make it. Mm-hmm. And so it's no surprise that in this family that does somehow get through a lot of these terrible things, like Yannick stood up to the Soviet like officer dude.
Yeah.
And I thought he was a goner. I thought he was dead. I thought his wife had died in childbirth. They both survive. One guy gets his finger cut off because he has gangrene growing, and then he dies the next day. But like, people around them keep on getting the worst of the worst, and they just are so breaking that time, that fine line, barely able to survive.
I agree. I thought that both of them were dead too, because Yannick, yeah, he's getting mad. He's raising his voice. I was like, this guy's going to pull out a gun. He's going to get shot in the head. That's all we're going to get of him. And then when, yeah, Yannick comes in at the very end of the third episode, I think you're supposed to even think for a second that the wife is dead because she has her eyes closed. There's like, she's very pale. There's a blanket.
I thought it was an
effective
scene. It just got taken a little bit less effective when we find out everybody survived and was fine.
Yeah,
but it's supposed to represent these real people. So I'm okay with it. The dates, the events in history, Germany invading Poland, how people tried to get visas, the forgeries. That was cool to see. Also, how she referred, I think Helena talks to her dad. She calls him Tata as opposed to dad or father or papa, which is a very, I guess, Greek, Latin, Czech, Sanskrit, Spanish, Polish, Romanian, Welsh, Yiddish, and Filipino way of referring. They can sometimes call their fathers Tad or Tati as well. And then I also like this ambassador Rio de Janeiro storyline, because it showed that as much of Europe was involved in the war, it was completely world war, because it's one of the only avenues that people had to escape was to get to Brazil.
Yeah.
And it so much reminded me of the transatlantic. The best part of that storyline was how they were talking about these people in Marseille who were getting Jewish immigrants out ASAP and trying to through this emergency rescue mission.
And if you want to talk about character gain, probably the most luck in the show, it is Addie not only being able to speak to the ambassador, but the ambassador ending up telling him, look, there's going to be this ship that's going to Brazil. That's like your best chance, and I'll put you on it.
I mean, yeah, he's got the most talent, and he's got the most, I won't say the most smarts, because some of the characters were like, Mila's husband is a doctor.
Again, Alina's working in a lab. Yeah.
Yes. No one's a slouch, but he does have a lot of opportunities that came to him from his fame. And it reminds me so much of, though, Life is Beautiful, and also Adrian Brody's character and the pianist. Because,
yes,
again, another Polish pianist, he also got the opportunity to survive because of some of his talent showing off. They also played Chopin with him. The difference is that Adrian Brody is a method actor. This is what he did when he took that role. And he was younger than Lerman is now.
Right.
Because Lerman's like 31, 32. And he was, I think, 29 when he took the role. He gave up his apartment. He dumped his girlfriend. He sold his car. He disconnected his phones. He left. He took two bags and his keyboard, moved to Europe, lost 30 pounds to get in shape for the role, and also learned for 4 to 5 hours each day piano until he could actually play the songs himself.
That's crazy. That's insane. I had it compared to the pianist only in the scene where they're having to shut down the garment shop, and a lot like at the beginning scene of the pianist, I think it's like the first 15 minutes, the family is trying to figure out what to take and what to bring, because at this point the Germans
have
come in.
No, I agree with you. The poignant moments, I think, were really effective in the show. When Helena got mad at her father for stealing potato parts, like the skins and stuff, yes, to make the soup later on, just as she had just seen some other guy got beaten to death because he had been, or this woman get beaten because she had been stealing for her family. Like, that was really compelling. Dorota ditching the baby. Like, I can't imagine someone you've hired and who is taking care of a kid to just do that, to just get up and leave. Removing the mezuzah as he was leaving the building, the carpet, the place you were just talking about. Yeah. The Poland Has Fallen moment on the radio that Addie hears.
I think the most chilling part to me was actually the part about 25 minutes in, when World War II officially begins and you get text explaining that on September 1st, 1939, you're hearing missiles in the back and you just see the mom and the dad in bed, just eyes wide open. It says Germany invaded Poland. 2 days later, in response, Britain, France, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada declared war on Germany. I thought that was probably the most like, whoa.
Yeah.
The show.
There was another shocker, was when Helena was asking the doctor for his help, and then the doctor like gives her this look, and she realizes that she's like overstepped, mm-hmm, and that she may have just like walked right into enemy territory. And so then she gets really cagey with her responses. I thought the acting was good there. I thought when Yannick he confronted the Soviet guy, but he also thought that he was adapting enough to the circumstances by trying to appeal to the guy's lawful mind as, yeah, opposed to the emotion of it. He wasn't going in there pleading for his life or his wife is sick or anything like that. He was coming in there, and only at the end, when the guy denied him being able to, his wife being able to have any time off for her maternity, any maternity leave after having a kid, to then go back and work in the labor camps. That's when he was like, but we're both humans. And he's like, no, you are a prisoner and I am the boss.
Well, I think that there's something to that, because in the first episode, Yannick, he even is explaining to one, yeah, of his associates that he's working with. He's like, I think we're going to be
dad.
Yeah, his dad. His dad is, doesn't his dad say that like he's afraid that Germans are supposed to be coming into the, to Poland?
I know that he's so law minded that like in that first episode, he's like, the law is the law. Nothing else matters. Like, I know how to structure myself. I'm protected. And then later on, we just slowly see him lose his job.
I was more bringing up, he wasn't really afraid of it. He was talking to someone and he was like, yeah, I don't think that the Poland's, I think Poland is going to be fine. I don't think that the Germans, they can try to take over us, but I don't think it's actually going to happen. And then, of course, third episode, he's just lost all faith. I think that when it comes to the acting, the costumes, the time period, the sets, they're all well and good. It reminds me a lot of A Small Light, which just came out last year.
That was my second comparison, because yeah, as much as Adrian Brody's character reminds me of Addie's character, because they have similar talents, Meep's character from that reminds me so much of Helena, specifically their significant others, the way that they, because Meep and who she marries, I think it was, his name was like Jan,
yeah,
in real life. And Meep wasn't Jewish, but she did help the Anne Frank family. And she joins this underground trying to do all these little tasks for them and stuff. That's very similar to what Joey King's character does with as Helena, where she even says, I want to be part of it, because Adam has joined the underground. And even though she's friend-zoned him, which I think was kind of fast.
It was strange, because in the first episode, and this is what I mean by kind of choppy storytelling, why even introduce that they were going to be together?
I think in the end, they're still going to be together. I think there's still a spark there. It's just that when he decided to leave and go to Lvov, because the first episode was all about Radon, and then suddenly they're in Lvov, and he is, it's been all this time, and that's when she's like, yeah, maybe if you hadn't left, it would have been different.
That was at the end of the second episode.
But she still wants to help. So he says something along the lines of, we all help in our small ways, and she's like, there's no one smaller than me. And that reminded me so much of Meep, because Meep in real life is 4'11".
Wow.
Yes. And she, do you want to guess how tall Joey King is?
Like 5'4"?
Exactly. No, that's it. That's what she is. She's 5'4". And so is, I believe, the person who played Meep in the A Small Light or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so their characters and their braveness just remind me of each other a lot. And so it's not like stories we haven't seen before, but like you're talking about, there are just so many different ones interspliced that though it can feel complicated, at least it's realistic, and these are the lucky ones, so it's you're not supposed to go in there thinking these guys are all going to die or anything. And so,
well, you know, Helena is going to not die, because we saw the front flash of her in the first,
yeah, but
scene.
I think the whole family is safe, but I think it's not about that. It's about just another version of history where I can understand there are some critics that have come in and said that this was relentlessly melancholy and that the competing storylines are distracting. And even myself, like, I don't think you have to be sitting there as much as a visual feed if it is. And I think the directing is good. And if you watch the characters' movements and stuff, there's always something in a scene to latch onto. I still feel like you could probably walk away from a full scene, come back to it, and still understand basically everything that's going on.
To me, this show is also just painfully slow. I think that there's parts that are good. Like I said, I like Yannick's character. It reminds me a lot of a movie I just recently saw called Paths of Glory, where it's like the characters that have bad things happen to them or that have a bad faith try to stay hopeful until the very last moment when their fate ends up just being terrible. I mean, like Yannick, again, he's lost all hope at this moment. And I think that the tone is also chilling, which it's supposed to be.
It's hard to show a scene in Siberia and not be chilling.
Yeah, but also just the scenes in the snow I thought were good as well. Yeah, but it's just, to me, it was also the weird love story they were trying to tell. They spent a lot of time showing all the different characters, whether it be Helena and Adam or Jacob and Bella. They even get married at the end of the second episode.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that actually, agree with this, but I thought that that actually took away from the show.
I agree with you like 50% because it's those tiny moments of hope that I know that the show's creators were like hinging on people having some sort of grasp of getting outside of the melancholy to show that people press for anything that they could rely on. Reunions, marriages, always riding on like even the piano music that you're talking about, how like at first it seemed like, oh, it's great that he has this talent, but by the end it was like the only thing he had to latch onto for anybody on that boat to listen to. And even Addy gets stripped away from his the person he falls in love with.
That was actually, I thought, my favorite storyline that they had in the whole series, Addy and Eliska, because I thought that actually their scenes together felt more realistic, and I wanted to see them get together. And yeah, it was very sad when Addy wasn't able to cross that line when they all get off the boat, because they have to dock in, I think, Casablanca, and they get reimbursed like 70% because they can't go to Brazil.
Yeah, but it's all in the market or Vichy controlled place, the Nazi controlled areas, just like in Transatlantic. I think it was Vichy that they kept on throwing around that as far as the government in control. It's also worth noting that the majority of the cast, outside of the people that we've mentioned, and even some of the people that we've mentioned, are Jewish and actually are like from Tel Aviv and places in Israel, and a lot of people who've done mostly Israeli television and movies. Yeah.
It was weird seeing Logan Lerman go from Hunters to this.
And Fury.
Fury had more, I thought, thematically was more like this. Just Hunters is a completely different series.
He also did Indignation, which was another one where it's about being Jewish. It's interesting with his character, though, because with him, when they interviewed him, he said how silly like Hunters was compared to this. And he was actually able to much more like put himself in his grandfather's position when he took on this role rather than with Hunters. Hunters upset me like no other when I saw that pilot, and they made up that history thing with the chess game.
I know
violent
that
chess
panned.
Game.
That part was panned.
Absolutely hated it. This, I know it's fiction, but I give it so much more leeway because of how much effort went into trying to make everything seem real and not trying to like make it so that Hitler like stubbed his toe or something in front of the world and it was mocked or
and
something.
And I was also glad because
what I mean by that, I just want to be clear, is that that they didn't just change history for the show's benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I was going to say that Masters of Air, although it definitely had emotional moments, I thought it really came to life when it was talking about the action. Here, it seemed like they were really focused on the emotion of the characters, and sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. For me, I think the biggest drawback here is really the first two episodes, because the third episode I thought was actually a bit
better.
Right?
I think it worked its way up. It's like if you have an extreme amount of patience and you like World War II things, I think you will find stuff to like in this show. So I'm like hinging that because I can tell you're probably not going to give it the best rating.
I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10. It passes.
Okay.
But just to me, I think that there's a lot of better shows. Like even A Small Light was a ton, I think, way better than this.
I think it had a better story because everybody is so aware of Anne Frank. And it's like you weren't so aware of what the people around Anne Frank were doing to try to protect her.
Right.
And that's just insanely interesting. And because of, I hate to say because of the terrible ending there, or like with Schindler's List, or with a lot of these ones where the main characters, they don't have as happy an ending, right?
Yeah.
We were the lucky ones. It's like, you watch this almost to, they're sparing us from having to see the worst of the Holocaust.
Well, I think that's going to get worse, though, come the later episodes.
But even so far, we haven't been like, they haven't shown us a ton of dead bodies. Most of the violence is off the screen.
I agree. Yeah.
It feels almost safer in that way. So I don't know what I would rate the series myself, but a 6 out of 10 seems like a fairly accurate. It has a 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. However, the IMDb score has been fluctuating like low at first. I think there was a lot of people coming in there with the complaints that you've had.
I did see right when I was about to watch it, I accidentally saw I had like a 4 on IMDb, which I think is way too
close. So this is what happened. I went to IMDb's page the day it came out, and for some reason, Amazon's usually pretty good at this and hiding that score until they get enough reviews. They had taken one person's review that had actually given a typed out review, and they used that on the front page as the main review. Like, even when you just use Google, when you type in what's the score,
right? It had 4 out of 10.
It was just one guy. That was just one guy who's it was so like, I feel like that might have affected maybe how you went into it, or certainly does to other fans who may have gone into it looking like that. But yes, 100%. On Rotten Tomatoes, it seems like most of the critics' responses have been pretty high up there, even though they do call it melancholy. Anything else you want to say?
No.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next episode. Hope you enjoyed this one. Bye.
Bye.